Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to Tris with Divinity, our special series of conversations with the devotees of Bhagwan Baba. Today, we have not one, but two guests. Actually, we have a husband and wife team whose stories of Swami are so intertwined that it would not make much sense to interview them separately. Hence, this joint interview with this pair of high-profile lawyers from Mumbai, India's financial capital. Our guests today are Mrs. Kamala Pandya and Mr. Nimish Pandya, both long-time devotees of Bhagwan Baba who have together served his mission with dedication and humility for decades. It gives me great pleasure to inform our listeners that Mrs. Kamala Pandya is a two-time gold medalist from the Bombay University. She was awarded the gold medal for bachelor's in psychology and again for excelling in legal jurisprudence in law. She is blessed to have been married by Bhagwan Baba at Puttaparthi, and as per Baba's divine command, she studied law after her marriage and changed her profession from teaching to pleading and is presently a practicing advocate in Mumbai. Mrs. Kamala Pandya is presently the Deputy National Coordinator of the Sri Satya Sai Balvikas Education Program in India. Her husband, Mr. Nimish Gulab Rai Pandya, is also an advocate of the Bombay High Court and is a notary public. He heads the law firm Pandya & Company, Mumbai, and he is on the board of directors of many leading corporations in India. Mr. Nimish Pandya is presently the National Vice President of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of India. He is in charge of the education programs in India, including Balvikas and the Sri Satya Sai schools, and is also a trustee of the Sri Satya Sai Trust Maharashtra. He has directed several value-based ballets and dramas for children and youth that were performed in the Divine Presence, especially during the festival of Ashadi Ekadashi. Both Mr. and Mrs. Pandya have been actively involved in the Sri Satya Sai Balvikas program since several years and have been associated with the Education in Human Values program ever since its inception. Sairam, Mr. and Mrs. Pandya, and welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam to you.
Let me start out by thanking you for making the time to join us for this conversation. Let's start with your journey to Swami. Between the two of you, who was drawn first?
Myself.
I think it was.
How did it begin?
I was maybe 4 years old when I first came to Puttaparthi.
Wow.
And my family was at Bangalore at that time.
Oh, okay.
And somebody had told my father, there is a divine person in Puttaparthi, why don't you all go? My father, basically a very religious man, took all of us, and as soon as we landed here, we were staying in East Prashanti, in that the first room, that time it was like a garage sort of.
Mm-hmm. Which year was that?
Maybe 60.
Wow.
It was 59, 60.
So Bhakti was so different then.
Yeah, it was, Swami would come down the hills, and the portico that you have now was like almost open for all of us to be seated there. And Swami would come out himself from the door and call families in. So at that time, we were lucky to be called in, and Swami called us, the entire family, for an interview. So I was maybe 4 or 5 years old.
Do you have any recollections?
Yeah, I remember the interview room, and I remember Swami materializing Vibhuti, lifting his sleeve and showing that there's nothing hidden over there. And I going below, a young little toddler, going right below his arm to see what's happening. And then at that time, he told my mom that you are a true mother, you will be a mother again. Like that, he kept saying something. And then that was all that I could recollect of the interview. And then we came off to Bombay.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a lull in the life, spiritual life. And then at the age of 17, again, Swami started coming regularly in my dreams. Almost every Wednesday night or Thursday morning, like I would be literally bombarded with his dreams, and
wow.
These were like clairvoyant dreams, like, I mean, as if what's going to happen.
Hmm.
Like he would tell me, teach children. And I just wonder, where do I go and teach children?
Is that how you became a Balvikas teacher, such
yeah.
an early age?
Yeah.
You started teaching at
17 years of age. I had just finished my BA at that time, and I was like looking out for a job, and I was not in the education field at all. And every Wednesday night, Thursday morning, Swami would say, teach children, teach children, teach children. And I didn't know whom to ask, where do I go? And one day I happened to go for a bhajan, and the lady seated next to me was a Gyanese lady.
British Gyanese lady.
And as soon as the bhajan got over, she said, would you like to come and teach children? As if repeating Swami's words. So I said, yes, where? She said, I stay at a particular place, and that was very close to where I live in Bombay. Why don't you come every Thursday? I have a class. Meanwhile, I had got a job in a school as a substitute for somebody on leave.
Mm-hmm.
And because of my academic qualification being very good, they took me without a BA degree.
I see.
And so I thought maybe, okay, after school I can go and teach these children. And I sat and watched her teach for a few weeks, and one or 2 weeks, and then I said I can do it myself. And I remember the first story I told in the Balvikas class with all charts and was Pundalika, the story of Pundalika. And then there was no stopping. This lady, Dr. Willie Nanji, had come to do a research of all Balvikas classes in the city of Bombay. She happened to be my colleague at the BA Psychology. In fact, during the BA Psychology, she would always excel and stand first in all those terminal exams. But at the university, I outbeat her in that way. And when she came to the class, she saw me and she said, aren't you Kamla? So I said, yeah, aren't you Willie? She said, yeah. Then we got to talking, and she said, this is the best class that I have seen in the whole city of Bombay.
Mm.
And she made a special mention of that class. And we used to have exams as Balvikas gurus. Nowadays there was nothing. I remember even that exam, I went for it. I said, what's that? Baba wants me to do it, we'll do it. And there's nothing to worry about, because they just ask you very essay type of questions where you express your views. It's more an expression of your views. And the lady who had examined that paper called up this British Gyanese lady and said, who is this Kamla? I want to know who is this lady, you know. And that's how I got into.
And you haven't looked back ever since.
No, because after that, every time it was Swami guiding.
Mm-hmm.
It was always Swami guiding. Except for that period between 5 to 17, when apparently Swami was not guiding. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the physical contact was
always there.
Always there.
I see. Coming to Brother Nimish, how did you get drawn to the Sai movement?
I think my story continues with where she joined, and in fact it so happens that the very class that she was taking.
You were a student?
No, I wish I was. But that was the class in the very building I used to stay.
Oh, I see.
And this lady, this British guy and his lady, used to be on the fifth floor of the same complex that we were staying. And the class used to go on. And at that point of time, my youngest brother Dharmesh, who later on was the alumni of the university also, he got into the Balvikas class.
Oh, okay.
So my family is a classic family that got attracted to the Sai movement through the Balvikas.
Oh, I see.
So when this youngster used to come home, and by the time, strange was the destiny that we were together in the same college at the same time, but we didn't know each other that time. But we used to know that she used to come to teach the Balvikas class,
mm-hmm.
but never did we pay any attention to it, because that point of time, the interest was totally different.
Mm-hmm.
But it was astonishing that this little brother of mine would come home and tell stories and recite the shlokas. And so that got my mother attracted into the Sai movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then being very close to my mother that I was, when my mother and the youngest brother got attracted, I started getting interested. There must be some phenomenon in this. What is this special? And fundamentally, spiritual inclination was always there from childhood. In fact, I remember a very humorous story that I was in Don Bosco, which is a missionary school in Mumbai.
Mm-hmm.
And in the moral science, in my report card, the moral science used to have 100 out of 100, and the other subjects used to have less. So my uncle used to chide my father that this guy is going to be useless in society. He's getting 100 marks in moral science and not getting marks. So the spiritual inclination that I already had always got me attracted to this movement at that point of time. I was impressed with it, so I used to be more assisting my mother, helping her to come to Puttaparthi, escorting her when she would come.
Mm-hmm.
Not really got involved in it, but was very pleasantly associated with it. I used to like what used to happen, but never really participated in that. But the association began that way, and till one day it was Srinivasa Shah who suddenly called me. I got summoned by this British guy and his lady.
Mm-hmm.
It was a time when Pandurang Dixit used to be there in charge of Bombay as the state president.
Right.
And usually every year there used to be some drama coming to Puttaparthi. So on this particular occasion they had a Hindi drama and they didn't have anybody to teach Hindi. And I was very good in dramatics right from my college days. So this British guy and his lady suggested to Pandurang Dixit. And I landed straight into the bungalow of Indulal Shah. And where this practice was going on with the children.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to direct this first play called Dekhi Sai Ki Leela.
Mm-hmm.
And that was being performed in the Purnachandra Auditorium. This is way back in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got into the Bal Vikas movement. I got attracted as a director for the play. And that was the beginning.
Yeah.
That's how the
And director
story
of one of many plays that and you have directed over
in
the
fact,
decades.
That was one of my first plays and it was very interesting because Pandurang Dixit himself was a very talented person. He was a great music director, he was a great director, he was a great artist himself. So for me it was a privilege to work with them. And though at that point of time the world was in awe of Indulal Shah as a great administrator, but I found him to be a very, very amiable personality, a very friendly personality, and because he himself was very interested in drama. The world doesn't know that our Indulal Shah himself is a very good director, himself is a very good actor, and has great in-depth knowledge about what art and acting and music can be. So we found a threesome,
mm-hmm.
very elder to me, two of them very elder to me, but we found a threesome and that kicked off a series which never ended.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
So this sounds cliched, but after Swami came into your life, because you were both academically very bright and you had great futures to make it big, which you have, but how did you make the shift to incorporate so much of spiritual commitment, community outreach in your lives?
Let me put it this way, that what has impressed me as I grew up in the organization, as I got to know more and more with Swami was, there's a very strange phenomenon there. I was very friendly. I had a lot of friends in Bombay and in fact I was very very popular guy in the St. Xavier's College and I had so many friends and that was the point that Swami picked up
mm-hmm.
when I first met him in the interview. When he chided me about the number of friends I had.
Which year was it, do you remember?
This year it must be 1980 sometime.
I see.
My mother and I we came through a very difficult terrain. We thought he was in Puttaparthi and there was a bus strike in Kottacherry. We went through the fields, came to Puttaparthi, Swami was not there, we rushed to Bangalore. The moment I reached Whitefield, straight away we got called for an interview.
Oh, wow.
And that point of time, moment he closed the interview door, I got fired left, right and center on the number of friends I used to have. And he said a very pertinent thing. He says, there's only one friend and that is God, and he pointed to himself. And so much in awe I was that I'm surprised when I look back that overnight I dissociated myself with all the friends. And I got attracted to Swami and thinking that the physical form of Swami was the only friend I have.
Mm-hmm.
Answering your question straight away, the shift happened because of this relationship with Swami.
Mm-hmm.
I got very impressed with what Swami was saying. And the three things that impressed me most was that I could be free of all dogmas, because the way he was explaining to me that there is God and he's only inside you and nowhere out freed me from the fact that I had to look for God anywhere else mm-hmm. outside. Second fact was that I got impressed with the fact that he says, I'm everywhere, I'm the same person, and therefore there is a bond with everyone. So that was a challenge to me to explore as a young man. That is, if what the first sentence is true, then the second must be true.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point of time, I didn't realize that when he said there's only one friend, God, inside,
mm-hmm.
I thought he was pointing to him. So I was attracted to the physical form.
Mm-hmm.
But now Swami, there's a period of time, then he stops talking to you and backs out.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was a great loss of a friend. I said, this is a breach. The only friend is a breach. And how can a friend behave like this?
Mm-hmm.
But those 3-4 years when he kept away from me made me realize that no, what he was trying to tell me was that God is inside and the journey must begin inside. with this, and simultaneously at that point of time, the whole program of education human values that started with Professor Rohilikar, Professor Gokak in Dubai. And that gave me an insight that no, meaningful life is not living alone for yourself. You must be associated with something good that you do in life. You must be able to give something to society. And I think that was the seed that Swami sowed in my mind at that point of time, which impressed me. I said, no, this is more meaningful. And that linked with my childhood traits also. As a child, I remember my mother telling me that I was always very eager to help people. If somebody had to be dropped at the station, I would drop. If somebody had something had to be brought for somebody, I would do it without a demur. I would just do it spontaneously. So I suppose the basic nature was there. Mm-hmm. Swami ignited that in a big way when I met him.
I see.
And that could help me to do that change. I could make that change.
So Swami was instrumental, obviously, directly involved.
Definitely.
What about yourself, Mrs. Pandya? After you took a Balvikas, didn't you have your own ambitions, goals? You became so involved in teaching other people's children. There was no monetary benefit. There was no great option of a prospect of a promotion. And here you were, you know, going out of your way on a limb, teaching children just because Swami told you in a dream. That to somebody from the outside, that doesn't sound like a very rational life decision for a young, bright person. Why did you do it?
The love of Swami was so great that nothing else mattered at that time. I mean, it was only Swami, and whatever Swami wanted, I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So money was secondary, though actually at that time my family was going through a financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
There was no money at home. My father was in a lot of debts at that time. But that was all secondary. It was not so important, and Swami didn't allow us to feel that. It's like, you know, they kehte hai na ki makhan se baal nikalte, like that. We never felt the pain of no money in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And only my brother and I supporting the entire family. And what a measly salary of 600 rupees and some tuition money. And that was enough for us. And we were very happy, and we lived like as if we were very rich at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, everything was Swami. So it was so great, because at that time Swami used to come to Bombay quite frequently. Every May, every December or January, he would be there. And every May and December, January would be a recharge. He would come, talk to me, ask me something. From somewhere in the crowd, he would find, and that was enough to let the next 6 months go. And then if there was any workshop on Balvikas or an education human values, I was always there. The moment I would read, as if he would search and come and say, Kabhi aaya.
When did you come? Who accompanied you? Did you bring your husband? Did your mother-in-law come?
All that, you know, so much of bonding was there that nothing in the world mattered.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's a match made in heaven, because Swami literally played matchmaker for you and performed your wedding.
To such an extent that Swami kept telling me that I will give you this boy, and to him he said, not this girl.
Oh, wow.
And that was a very funny thing that happened. For a year it went on.
Like a drama?
Yeah, it was like Narad Muni in full form.
She had to get married to a drama. Swami himself was a fantastic dramatist. He couldn't do anything which was not dramatic. You see, so he had to do something very interesting. So it started, picked up that there was this great, we had a very huge event in Mumbai in Shivaji Park, where for the first time we had the convocation of the Preciosa children.
Mm-hmm.
And the famous Bal Thackeray, the Shiv Sena Supremo in India, was the chief guest. And that was the time when Kamala was speaking on the stage. And I was in charge of the cultural affairs of the whole situation. And she speaks very well. In fact, she speaks better than me. So she spoke very well. And somewhere in the glimmer, Swami had caught the adoration that I had for her talk at that day. And that's the point that he picked up to build up the relationship between me and Kamala. Because I remember that day in the evening when he came back to Dharmakshetra, and I was awarded the privilege of giving him a flower before the aarti. And I picked up the flower and gave it to him, and he threw it back at me.
Hmm.
Saying,
give it to your wife.
And I was shell-shocked, because those were the days as a young man when I was thoroughly geared up not to marry and live a life of, you know, celibacy and stay away from women and kind of stuff. So I was in shell-shock when he said that, you give it to you. I said, what, Swami? I'm looking at him. What's wrong? He said, no, but he picked up from that day.
Give it to your wife.
And he come to my mother and ask my mother, oh, tomorrow.
Where is your daughter-in-law? She is a Balvikas guru.
My mother wouldn't know from Adam's, whom is he talking about? No, what's he talking about? he would go to her and say, this is the situation. And then when we knew each other a little bit, then he took a reverse track. Then he would come and tell my mother, no, not a, because she is a Sindhi by birth and I am a Gujarati. But he wanted that ultimately we should get married. But he was preparing both the family.
I see.
So he would come to my mother and say that, look, she's a Sindhi, she's a Pakistani, don't do it, you know. And she would go back and tell her that, no, don't worry, he's the same boy. Went on for 1.5 years. And we were all thoroughly confused as to what's happening.
Not only that, he would talk to me in the lines.
Uh-huh.
And he would call them for interview.
Oh, I see.
So then sometimes people started doubting me because when Swami's walking and talking, you don't know whom he's implying.
I see.
And then once he even called me out of the line and said, he used to call me Bombay Balvikas.
Bombay Balvikas, come here.
And then about almost 7-8 steps and then Padnamaskar Leo and whatever Swami says is the promise to you. Every word is the truth. Don't listen to anybody else. Don't listen to your mother-in-law. Don't listen to your... What I tell you is the final truth.
Hmm.
And one day before he calls them and gives them an interview, this, not this girl. Any other girl you bring, I will get him. Not this girl.
Were you thoroughly confused?
Absolutely confused. At least she was. But only two people were not confused. One was my father-in-law. He was a very unique man. A very strange person who would trust his unmarried daughter with this boy. And I was confident that Swami is pulling my leg because somewhere or other they said, because I didn't see any other purpose to this drama which was happening. And one dramatist understands the other dramatist well. So that was the background. So that's how ultimately it happened. One day, Dr. Fanibanda was in Whitefields and he came suddenly home and said, Swami's called, and we rushed and he fixed a date and then the marriage happened in Puttaparthi thereafter.
I see. So in the interview room or?
In the interview room.
He asked me in Bombay, where do you want the marriage? Do you want a big public show or do you want Swami? So I said, of course, Swami, I only want you. I don't want anything else. Even a small room would do.
We'll do it in the interview room. 10 people, 10 from your side, 10 from your husband's side. We'll call them in.
30 can easily fit into, but there were more than 30 at that time. Because he must have invited more, I don't know. It looked overcrowded, the room, and with all that sari and that paraphernalia and everything.
I think he was more excited that we both get married fast because he called us at 8 o'clock in the morning and he was on the portico at 7. And he was screaming, why are we late? Pushing everybody. And we all ran half-dressed, before we could really manage, we were all inside the interview room, you know. And that's how it happened.
So he performed the ceremony.
Everything. In fact, I told you, no, he had come in my dream when I was at Whitefield to some Balvikas workshop, telling that he would be the Purohit to my wedding. At that time, I didn't understand. I mean, my knowledge of Hindi and Sanskrit was very poor because I had brought up in a convent school and Sindhis are more Hong Kong affected than... So, I was a typical that sort of a girl. So, I didn't understand. So, I was wondering what was... But I had a very good friend and she said Purohit means not just a priest, it means a supreme priest will perform. So for me, supreme priest can only be God, that means Swami for me. And then Swami started working every time saying that I will do your marriage, I will do your marriage.
So during the ceremony in the interview room, did he give you any advice on how to work out an ideal marriage?
Yeah. First he started with the fact that he had to be a little killjoy in ensuring that I don't have the full bliss of so-called marriage. The previous day, he called Kamala and my mother and Kamala's mother and all of them inside and we gave them a sari, the usual protocol that Swami used to enjoy. He used to give saris to people. And not only the boy always got a dhoti before the marriage, but when it came to me, he would refuse to give the dhoti. So ultimately my mother had to ask him that, Swami, you've given sari, but what the dhoti about my son? He said, he doesn't know how to wear it and therefore he'll be very uncomfortable. No point giving it to him, you know. Because if he doesn't know where properly, he'll come out and it'll be very shameful. So it started with that situation.
But this was linked to what we used to speak in the cab.
It's amazing how Swami's omnipresence is, you know. That
Whenever we would travel in Bombay in the cab, we would talk something personal. There used to be those flower vendors who tell you to take gajra.
Yeah.
I had short hair, typical Bombay girl. And every time that girl would say,
Sir, flowers for the lady. So he'll say, she doesn't have long hair. So why flowers?
I used to chide that guy. He used to chap, look, what are you offering flowers? She doesn't even have a hair. She's got such short hair. Where will she put the flowers? So this conversation was picked up by Swami. The other conversation was related to my dhoti. She used to ask me, because she's a Sindhi, I'm a Gujarati. We used to wear lungi, it's very typical, the South Indian style, and they are used to all night suits and, you know, kind of
safari suits.
Stuff.
they have the typical night dress, blue pajama.
So it's a very formal situation as against a very informal situation. The cultural difference is very strong. So this conversation also used to happen, is what you're wearing. And then she used to say that if you wear a dhoti, if it falls off, you know, shame, you know, it's very shameful if it falls off.
The same word Swami said.
Now at the wedding, when in answer to the question, why I'm not getting a dhoti, he says, no, this is no point if it falls off, shame, he's looking at Kamala the same way, you know, he's telling Kamala. And then on the wedding day, next day, the wedding begins as we all enter inside and he's looking at me, so, you know, a guy you didn't want to marry ever in your life, you wanted to be free, now what happens, you know, kind of stuff, I've trapped you. So I'm looking at him smiling and he starts at the wedding, he speaks to my mother, father, everybody. And then he recited shlokas. I mean, he put his hand on both our heads together and then kept on reciting a lot of mantras in his own way. Now, we were both dumb at that time, Sanskrit was really not. But we could feel the vibration that this is pure blessings, you know, going through. And then when the reception got over, no, I mean the mantras got over, then started the gifts. So first he took out the Mangalsutra and he knew. And this is something I must share, because even at that stage, at that point, being a rational person, being a lawyer, I always thought that there must be some trick. I can understand Vibhuti coming, but how can a chain come out of his hand? Now this is something which is it's in the back of my mind. So he makes me sit next to him. I'm sitting right at his feet and then he puts his hand up like a, you know, typical sleeve up situation. And then it takes the whole hand out and zoop on my face, he hits me, the whole Mangalsutra comes out. Mm-hmm. And he says, with a twinkle in his eyes, he says, now hold it, you know, now put it round her
neck.
So I put it, we all enjoy it, everybody's in awe, they put the thing up. And then comes my turn. He brings out a ring and I'm still 10% doubt in my mind. He takes out a ring and puts it in my finger. It doesn't go in. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely ring.
He gives it to me to put it in your...
He gives it to Kamala.
In fact, both the things, he held part of it. Like the Mangalsutra also, one side, Swami is holding it.
One side, I'm holding it.
Oh. The ring also, he helped me to put it. Always like he was there all the time.
But as the ring goes in my finger, it won't go. It's on the wrong size.
And
it got stuck. Now look at my reaction. It's sticking there. I'm enjoying that I'm getting a ring. At the same time, in my mind, Swami, there's something wrong. This is the wrong one you picked up, kind of stuff. Didn't say anything because I didn't have the courage to open my mouth that time, but I kept it like that. And then the advice began. He started with the story that he is very fond of giving, the story about how love fades away. When you say, you know, first when the husband and wife are walking, if the stone is 20 feet away, the husband says, look darling, be careful, the stone is there. Mm-hmm. And after a few years you walk and say, look darling, the stone is here. And after a few years after marriage, he says, can't you see there's a stone there, kind of, the whole thing changes, you know. So he had the lovely example in his very narrative, descriptive style he gave that story. And then he said a very important thing which has stuck with, I think, both of us for many, many years now. And that's what he's been telling everyone. And that's the advice that he gives every married couple. He says, marriage is something which you have to build upon. It is something where two people have to first come to understand each other and then adjust with each other. He says the common mistake that people make is they try to adjust straight away without understanding. But there is a whole huge process of understanding each other first, and then you adjust, and that becomes a firm bond between the two people.
I see.
He went ahead to say that it is a conjunction of two souls and not only of bodies.
That's when we did the aarti.
Yeah, and then a little later when the aarti was being performed, I remember the camphor was in two pieces. So when we lit it, there were two separate pieces.
Mm.
And for the first time, I saw Swami like a perfect carom board player. Two lit camphor pieces, Swami hits one, like that. And it just goes and merges with the other one in such a way that both become one.
I see.
And then it turns out,
before marriage, two. After marriage, one.
It's a union of two souls.
I see.
That was a classic thing he did there. But as before this solemn and beautiful end came was the naughty and the mischievous part of it when the ring didn't go. So now everything gets over, it turns out to be killed.
Why? What's the news? How is your ring?
So I'm very belligerently telling Swami, it's the wrong size. It's not fitting. Acha, it's the wrong size. So he picks up the whole thing in his hand. I tell you, what I saw was an amazing piece of miracle that time, and I can, despite all my determination not to see the miracle, I had to see it in the face. He picks up that metal ring, which has a lovely white stone, a crystal stone, like a diamond, like a stud. Picks it up in front of my eyes, just 6 inches away. He bends the whole metal, okay, and blows. And that one stone becomes 2 stones in front of my eyes. And then he says, Abhira,
wear it now.
He put it inside.
Even a goldsmith will not give you such a perfect match.
You know, that's beautifully done. And that ring was so amazingly beautiful that I was in awe of that ring. It was like
two diamond studs. Or 2 diamond studs.
Yeah, I think, in fact, I think Dr. Sapphire and I were the only 2 people who had that ring. In fact, we later on exchanged a lot of notes with Dr. Sapphire. There's 2 people used to have 2 diamond studs, huge ones. And it was heavy. If you wear it, it will hang on your finger. So I was thrilled. I was overjoyed. But then came the anticlimax. He says,
it is good. Keep it safe. But one day you will lose it.
You will lose this ring. So I'm saying, what? I said, never lose this. How can I ever lose this? But he forecasted that I'm going to lose that ring. After that, for several years, I wore that ring.
Only on important.
Wear it on important days, don't wear it every day. So I used to go to court and I used to argue matters, and I remember till today, when I used to argue matters with the ring in my hand, the judges who were sitting on the bench, they used to look at it. People used to ask me, what is this ring, what are you wearing? Because I was a young man, not that I was a flourishing lawyer and I would have made my millions by that time. You see, as a young man wearing such a ring, the judges used to call me after the session gets over, what are you wearing in your hand, Mr. Pandya? Okay. And one day, I was traveling to the U.S. with Sarlaven in Dubai. Kamla and I were traveling to the U.S. And on Singapore airport, at Changi airport, I go to the washroom. Just to wash my hands, I take out the ring on one side. And by the time I wash my face and come out, 1 split second, I realize I forgot the ring. I go inside and it's gone. So he forecasted that right from the beginning. So this little game that Swami used to play with me and, you know, ensure that. And that also had a background, now I look back, because basically I never liked jewelry, I never used to wear jewelry. Even today I don't like to wear rings, I don't like to wear chains, I am not fond of it at all. So he knew it, but it was his way of giving us joy and happiness, just his way of telling us that, you know, I'm with you and I want you to be happy, I'm there with you. So that was the amazing part of the...
Maybe the 7-year itch was over and
you didn't need it. Later on I remember Kamala asking Swami, that Swami lost his ring, he doesn't need it anymore.
I see. How long, I must ask this, how long were you married by the time you lost it at Changi Airport?
I think it was 7 to 8
years. Oh my God, really?
7, 8 years. 7, 8 years. We were going to the U.S. I was going for the first time.
I suppose it must be the 7-year itch that needed, probably I needed some protection by that time. So I got saved on that issue. But then Swami said, doesn't need it, don't worry about it.
But there was amazing marriage advice also that he gave you about understanding first and then adjustment. Perfect marriage counseling.
You see, I tell you, Swami's concept of marriage, as I have seen over the years, has been very traditional. He believes that marriages are fundamental to leading and creating a good society.
Mm-hmm.
Because he always believed that family as a unit is a very important unit of society.
Mm-hmm.
And all societies which are based on a strong family will survive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he wanted India to become. That's what he wanted our society to become. And therefore, family was a very important part for him. And therefore, I used to always wonder, why would Swami encourage marriages, or why would Swami perform marriages, mm-hmm. and why Swami would do this. But now I get to know and I get a feeling that Swami wanted that all husband-wife teams and all families should be so strong that on that foundation the whole society should.
Mm-hmm.
The world of Sai would be based upon a great family as a unit. So that's why I suppose he encouraged everybody on that issue.
Speaking of a husband and wife team being united, both of you have consistently been committed to the Sai organization, the Sai mission. How do you remain so inspired all the time?
Yeah, that's a very important question. I would put it this way, that it is the purpose of life that Swami made us understand, that between birth and death, if one has to live, how? The enthusiasm of the fact that God is within you, and the challenge to realize that God is within you, and that challenge and that realization can be had through the medium of the organization, has been a great challenge, if you put it that way. Because see, not anywhere in the world, not anywhere else in other dimensions of life, can you practice and have the hope of realizing or experiencing what Swami has told us to do. If Swami said that He is everywhere, the challenge to understand that, that's the image. And that's what happened to Kamala and I both throughout Bal Vikas and throughout my association with the organization. He said we could feel His presence everywhere in everyone. Okay? Moment you make it a sort of a objective of your life, that I want to see in action what Swami has told me, that He's inside me and He's inside everybody else. If this becomes a challenge and this becomes the focus and the objective of your life, and if you start with that clarity in your mind, then life becomes very interesting. Everything that you do becomes very interesting. For example, if it is personal life, let me start and put in three factions. If it is personal life, what happens is, normally in the world of today, in the 21st century, for two educated, intelligent people to be together in harmony is not an easy situation.
No, that's a challenge in itself. It's a huge achievement.
It's not an easy situation. Yeah,
not
especially when they are both very educated, both forward-looking, both having their independent points of view.
And both lawyers, capable of arguing their case very well.
Now, but I wasn't a lawyer. Swami asked
her to become a lawyer. But
and he kept saying, I know you don't like it, but you have to do it for your husband's sake.
You have to help your husband. So that was the mandate to her that she was to help me. But the point that I was trying to make is that she realized and I realized at every stage that though we may be two different personalities, two different bodies, two different forms, but somewhere down the line, there is an element where we feel Swami's presence. Okay, if I am off the track, then she would be able to bring me back. Or things that I have prayed for, things that I want to happen, even if we had an argument, and if she prays and I pray, things would settle down. Otherwise, we should have become a very animated situation. We can get calmed down. So the personal level, His presence is a very enthusiastic, is a factor that really enthuses you to live life further, point one. At the family level, there could be many factions. Remember, both of us are from different cultures.
Right.
And in fact, when Swami was asked, are you against marriages of different castes and creeds? Swami said, I'm not against marriages. But what I tell people is that cultures are different. Therefore, adjustments will be very different. So that's the point that you're trying to make. That Swami was never against inter-caste marriage, but Swami was not in favor of that because He says it would be difficult for them to understand and adjust if the cultures are different. And therefore, same caste, same culture marriages was the point. But in my case, since it was done by Him, it was different. But in two families also, for me, it was a great revelation that her family being a Sindhi, my being Gujarati, the bond between her brothers and her sisters and my parents became very strong. So that was the second factor which I realized, that divinity can play a great role. Divinity can be experienced in day-to-day life. Thirdly, as we go further into professional life, I found that Swami would be there all along, in my profession, in my office, in my courts, everywhere Swami would be a part of our lives. Even to the extent that since I was associated with this I organization, or she also was associated with this I organization, normally the lifestyle of a lawyer in a city like Mumbai is a very hectic life. It's like 24/7 you are on the job, you have no time for anything else. In fact, there's an English adage which says that a law is a jealous mistress. It doesn't even tolerate your wife.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the kind of requirement and commitment that's required. We used to leave office at 5 o'clock in the evening. And people used to tell us that, look, if you want to succeed in this profession, this lifestyle of yours is not correct. What you're doing, you won't succeed. And I would say, nothing doing. If God has promised me, it'll work. And I tell you, Varuna, now over the years, last 35 years that we've been in the practice, it is the fact that I am associated with Swami has given me more glory as a professional lawyer, where people stick to me even if I'm away from office for 1 month. They would wait for me till I came back. Now, this is Swami's presence. Even in courts when I'm arguing matters, if I'm in a difficult situation, a word like Om Sai Ram or Swami take care or Swami look, immediately the mindset of the judge changes.
Mm-hmm.
Even the mindset of the opposition changes, and you find the realization coming. So when you see, when you make it a point of your life that you want to experience Swami in day-to-day life, then that challenge is a great challenge, and that is the enthusiasm that we feel that we should continue with. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately at the end of life, when Swami says, when you close your eyes and you breathe your last, you want to feel His presence all along.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it's not only a selfish thing, it is something that you see it in society. It's something to be shared with everybody. And the more you share, the more joy it is, I think. And mm-hmm. That's the enthusiasm part of it that comes in.
For me, like for example, I'm teaching Balvikas, that inspiration came because I found that I could change myself first.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time I go to a class, I was like, I'm by nature a perfectionist. I can't do anything slipshod. So if I do something, I must do it well. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a Balvikas class or taking a 8th standard maths lesson or whatever. If I do, I must excel. I can't do anything slipshod. And that must have been, with the grace of God, the reason for me getting gold medals.
Mm.
So when I used to go for my Balvikas, the whole week I will contemplate on what I have to teach the next. It's not like just one off, just before the class I open my
book. Yeah.
The whole week, even now, till today, though I've been teaching Balvikas now almost 30 years, I still, if I have to take a lesson, though I may not have a book, but I'll be contemplating. I have to teach this Bhaj Govindam Shloka. So what example should I tell the children? What should I read? And while contemplating, it is going into me. So first I'm improving myself and then looking. So from not a word of Sanskrit, I learned everything. I would travel with my friends and I'll ask them to recite and I'd write it in English. And being, luckily for me, a very good memory, a photographic and fantastic memory. Now it's not so good, but that time it was excellent. I just have to hear something once and it's all done. Like, so I would learn everything that way and then go back home and on my own, you know, practice and then be ready for the next class.
Mm-hmm.
So that way I found that I have changed to a greater extent. More than the children, I think I have benefited myself first.
From the Balvikas. But was it hard to go back to law school after marriage and start another?
Actually, what happened, I was the only student going to the law school.
How do you mean?
There was nobody there. There is an entire roll of 150 students, but nobody would attend. I did the morning session, you know, from 7 to 10 in the morning. Then I'd go, because Swami said you have to help him in the office. So I would go to the office in the afternoon. So after the second year, I could practice in the office. There would be nobody, and I'd just like a fool, two or three of us and the professor. I said, no point. Then I stopped going, and I read on my own. And as I told you, I had a photographic memory. I had to read something, and I can print the whole thing back full. So it was a walkthrough, it was a cakewalk for me.
Oh, my God, another gold medal in the bag.
So, and when I got, and Swami, that time my in-laws were here. They were in Puttaparthi. They were staying here, and we were alone there. And Swami kept saying,
has your daughter-in-law completed her law exam yet?
And finally when I got the result, I got a first class, that's all. I didn't know that I'm on the gold medal list. After a month, they send you a letter saying that you have been awarded the gold medal for so and so. So I immediately sent a telegram to Bhagwan at that time. And I remember Swami coming out on the portico and telling my father-in-law, Dekha?
See. Your daughter-in-law has got a gold medal. She did not like law. Still, she got a gold medal.
So Swami was very proud about it. I was not very happy about this. Because anything to do with fighting, I just don't like. Anything where there is a ruckage of vibration, I just don't like it. I think everything should go smoothly. And you know, everybody is shouting and screaming. So finally, Swami told me, you help in the office. You do the documentation part of it. And so we have struck a balance there. I say, you go and fight in the courts and I'll give you all the
support from the back end.
Yeah, she's been a great support. In fact, this incident also was made very humorous by Swami.
Mm-hmm.
By the 3 years, that time the law was a 3-year course. So every 3 years, during the course of 3 years, whenever we came to Puttaparthi, Swami would come right. Those were the days in the sands.
Yes.
And Swami used to come out in the sands and Swami used to come out and ask me, how was the result first year? I said, Swami, you went to exam, very good, very good. So again, 6 months, second exam, 2 years, 3 years. So third year, when the final exam came in, he was very excited. I remember it was raining, it was drizzling, And Swami came out from the room in the drizzle. As the drizzle happened, he's getting wet and coming to me and asking me,
is the exam over? Did she pass?
I said, ah, Swami, ho gaya pass. I mean, I was anticipating that Swami would be very happy and we'll get an interview or we get some sweets or something, you know, some gift we get from Bhagwan. And like a kid, he came across in the rain. My wife got result. I said, ah, Swami, pass ho gaya. Acha, pass ho gaya.
She passed. Very good. Very good. Now you can fight every day.
That was an anticlimax in the sense. I mean, he said, very great. You passed very good. Now you can fight every day.
Anyone can fight their own battle.
I said, what, Swami? That was it. And all these 3 years of excitement and the anticlimax is this kind of situation.
So you're both obviously very successful and committed lawyers. And you're doing very well in your profession. How do you strike a balance between home, work, and side duties? Basically, how do you integrate these different aspects of your life? It's not easy. Most people find it almost impossible. We get stuck in one rut and can't think outside.
No, like Saturday, Sunday is only side work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
What if it affects your business?
Then one of us goes for the, like for example, sometimes I have to go, sometimes he has to go. So between the two of us, both don't go, then one of us goes on a Saturday. It's not regularly, it happens off and on, and then we strike a balance and I go or he goes, and we, but Sunday is exclusively for Sai work.
Sai Ram, you just heard the first part of a three-part conversation with Mrs. Kamala Pandya and Mr. Nimish Pandya from Mumbai. This was recorded in the studios of Radio Sai on August 2012, and in conversation with them was Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. The second part of this conversation will be aired same day, same time next week. We hope you enjoyed this program. Your comments and feedbacks on this are welcome. As always, you can reach us through email. Our email ID is listener@radiosai.org. Thank you, and Sai Ram from Prashanthinilayam.